Members, if you would take your seats, we'll go ahead and get underway. The Healthcare Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Emma, please call the roll.
Chair Garrison.
Here.
Vice Chair Jogg.
Here.
Ranking Member Woodson.
Yes.
Representatives Abbott.
Here.
Amnesty.
Here.
Antone.
Here.
Bartleman.
Here.
Black.
Here.
Campbell.
Here.
Kennedy excused. Mello.
Here.
Salzman. Skidmore.
Here.
Steele.
Here.
Travolsi.
Here.
Quorum is present, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Emma. Good morning, members. Quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone to the Healthcare Appropriations Subcommittee this Thursday, November 9th of 2023. Please make sure your cell phones and other stuff are turned off or on silent. Members, today we're going to conclude the LBR, our Legislative Budget Request presentations, with presentations from the Department of Elder Affairs by Curtis Barker, their Chief Financial Officer, from the Agency for Persons with Disabilities. We have a number of folks. I think Rose Salinas is here. Is Rose gonna, yep, Rose is here. He's going to be presenting on behalf of APD and the Department of Veterans Affairs. Where's Bob? Is Bob out there? Okay, great. All right, great. Gang's all here. Before we get started today, I just want to thank everyone for your continued attention on these issues and for your participation. I do always, as we always want to do, want to thank our sergeant staff for what they do to keep us safe. And we have a new member of the sergeant staff today who's going to be introducing to you. So this is Kirk Bradwell, right? All right, Kirk. Everyone say hello to Kirk. We appreciate you. Thank you for what you do for keeping us safe. All right. So with that, we're going to start our process today. And I think Curtis Barker could get started from Department of Elder Affairs. Members, as the presentation comes through, if you would, we're going to do questions as we go through at the conclusion of the presentation. So if you have questions for the folks with APD, let's let them finish their presentation, then we'll do member questions, complete those questions. Oh, sorry, we're at Elder Affairs, excuse me. We do Elder Affairs, have those questions, then we'll move on to APD questions, followed by Veterans Affairs questions, and we'll wrap. All right? All right, thank you. First, you recognize.
Financial Officer at the Department of Elder Affairs. I extend my gratitude to Chair Garrison, Vice Chair Jacques, Ranking Member Woodson, and esteemed committee members for dedicating your time and attention to our presentation today. I'm here to present the department's legislative budget request for the 2024-2025 fiscal year. The department sincerely appreciates Governor DeSantis's continuous responsiveness to the evolving needs of Floridians' expanding elderly population. Furthermore, we'd like to express our deep gratitude for the invaluable partnership with the legislature as we eagerly anticipate the opportunity to collaborate with you all to elevate our quality of services we provide. In a broader context, individuals are experiencing prolonged and improved states of well-being, leading to longer lifespans. Simultaneously, Florida is witnessing an unprecedented influx of residents. Presently, our senior demographic stands at an estimated 6.1 million, and the demographic is poised for sustained expansion, which will require our sustained support. For the 2024-2025 fiscal year, the department submitted legislative budget requests which seek to obtain approximately $41 million in general revenue funding, of which $15 million is non-recurring and approximately $60 million in trust fund funding, of which $55 million is non-recurring. For the purposes of our presentation today, we have organized our issues into distinct categories for clarity and focus. For priority issues, this category encompasses the Florida Alzheimer's Center of Excellence, senior housing, and the long-term care ombudsman program issues. These issues are considered our most pressing concerns, and I will discuss each in detail. For our legacy program issues, this category includes a range of programs both funded by general revenue and federal sources, which have played a significant historical role in our department. I will also discuss these in detail. For our information technology issues, we've compiled various requests aimed at modernizing and supporting our systems and IT infrastructure. This includes efforts to establish a secure computing environment, the development of a ticketing system, and staff augmentation for both PALM and our IT division's efforts to improve our reporting capabilities. For our workforce retention and recruitment issue, this category is dedicated to requesting the conversion of OPS positions throughout various divisions and to full-time equivalent staff positions, reflecting our commitment to retaining and attracting skilled personnel. And lastly, our other issues encompasses requests to enhance our senior legal helpline, which funding has remained the same since 2017, the reclassification of an administrative assistant role to a higher level, and other technical items. So in total, our funding request for the 2024-2025 fiscal year is $100,663,784. On this issue, the department is seeking budget authority for approximately $2 million in recurring general revenue funding to enhance the Florida Alzheimer's Center of Excellence, referred to as FACE. The FACE initiative already supports more than 300 Alzheimer's families by offering person-centered early intervention, quality care management, and community support. It also enhances Florida's infrastructure for Alzheimer's disease and related dementias and addresses current issues in dementia care. Florida faces the second highest prevalence of Alzheimer's disease, and caregivers provide substantial unpaid care, resulting in a significant financial burden and economic impact to our state. The NanCares component of this project was evaluated in fiscal year 2022-2023 with assistance of a highly regarded economist. Initial calculations show that the program reduced number of falls by 75% and hospital visits by 68%. These findings indicate a potential healthcare savings cost of $13,444 per participant per year. The corresponding improved quality of life to the person with dementia and the caregiver are immeasurable. For reference, these outcomes were so significant that they were chosen to be presented at the Alzheimer's Association International Conference. Additionally, it is noteworthy that Florida is the only state unit on aging with an Alzheimer's Center of Excellence, which was officially launched by the governor in 2022. Our next issue is the department is requesting $10 million in non-recurring general revenue budget authority for a senior home rehabilitation program. This would be a new program in alliance with the department's goals to enable seniors to age well and live independently in their homes. Florida has the second highest senior population per capita, and this program will ensure that elders can safely remain in their homes and communities as they age. Home rehabilitation, modifications, and repairs can prevent falls, injuries, and illnesses among seniors, reducing the need for emergency services, hospitalizations, and nursing home placements. The proposed legislative budget request will prioritize services that eliminate health and safety issues, correct code violations, improve energy efficiency, and enhance the well-being of seniors. The program's objective is to increase independence, accessibility, and functionality for seniors. It aligns with the department's priority for streamlined, cost-effective, and consumer-friendly programs. Home modification programs have shown a substantial return on investment by reducing medical costs, including inpatient and outpatient expenditures. Compared to the annual cost of Medicaid nursing home placement, the Senior Home Rehabilitations Program one-time cost of up to $20,000 saves over $70,000 per individual per year. Our next issue, the department is seeking budget authority to address salary disparities in the Comprehensive Assessment and Review for Long-Term Services, or CARES program. CARES is responsible for determining medical eligibility for Medicaid waiver programs and nursing home services, which involves reviewing medical documents and conducting comprehensive assessments. Staffing challenges have led to delays in processing cases affecting vulnerable Floridians seeking Medicaid services. In this program, the department is venturing into homes of our beloved seniors to ensure the delivery of essential services that address their most critical needs. This initiative will establish a sustainable approach to postpone long-term care requirements. The department is requesting approximately $1.9 million in recurring authority for the general revenue and operation and management trust funds, along with approximately $1 million in rate to improve the recruitment and retention of full-time equivalent staff and attract qualified employees for the CARES program. Currently, CARES salaries are lower than comparable positions in other state agencies, making it challenging to retain quality staff in a competitive job market. On our next issue, the department is seeking funding to address staffing shortfalls in the Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program, or LTCOP, to meet Florida's growing senior population. The department is requesting approximately $186,000 in budget authority and $110,000 in rate for two full-time equivalent staff. The LTCOP serves as a mechanism for residents and concerned citizens to voice complaints against long-term care facilities and employees, ensuring the rights, safety, and welfare of residents. In certain cases, LTCOP serves as the last remaining advocate for our most vulnerable individuals. Examples of such advocacy ensure ensuring the rights to receive visitors or the freedom to practice one's religion. Staffing shortages and reliance on volunteers have prevented LTCOP from meeting the required quarterly and monthly visits to nursing homes, assisted living facilities, and adult family care homes. These positions aim to improve efficiency by addressing issues before they escalate and complementing the efforts of regulatory agencies, families, and providers. On this issue, the department requests $6 million in recurring budget authority and general revenue for the Alzheimer's Disease Initiative, or ADI program, to serve over 400 additional seniors. Florida's Alzheimer's Disease Initiative plays a crucial role in addressing the evolving need of individuals and families living with Alzheimer's disease and related dementias. One of the critical services provided by ADI is respite care, which offers support to caregivers, individuals diagnosed with probable Alzheimer's disease and related dementias, particularly when cognitive changes disrupt daily activities. The burden of caring for someone with Alzheimer's disease and related dementias is daunting, often resulting in high levels of emotional stress, depression, and adverse effects on caregivers' health, employment, income, and financial stability. The ADI respite program serves as a lifeline for these caregivers, helping to avert burnout and the early confinements of seniors in nursing homes or long-term care facilities, a path that may become necessary as the disease progresses, demanding round-the-clock care. This funding request will bolster the ADI respite care services, encompassing a range of options such as in-home, facility-based emergency and extended respite care, offering much-needed relief for caregivers who devoted themselves to those living with Alzheimer's disease and related dementias. This issue, the department is requesting $10 million in recurring budget authority and general revenue to expand the Community Care for the Elderly program, or CCE. The CCE program serves seniors age 60 and older who are assessed as functionally impaired, meaning difficulties performing everyday physical activities, and at risk of nursing home placement. It aims to assist these individuals in living safely and independently in their communities and homes as they age. The program provides a wide range of services, including adult daycare, case management, home health aid, and more. This legislative budget request will serve an additional 1,497 CCE clients, particularly the most vulnerable elderly individuals who require care. This aligns with the department's priority to create a streamlined, cost-effective, and consumer-friendly long-term care system. On this issue, the department is requesting $5 million in recurring budget authority and general revenue to expand Home Care for the Elderly program, or HCE. The HCE program provides care for elderly individuals age 60 and older in family-type living arrangements and private homes, serving as an alternative to institutional or nursing care home. To be eligible, individuals must meet specific criteria, including age, income, assets, and the presence of an approved adult caregiver. The requested budget authority will allow the HCE program to serve an additional 1,349 clients, particularly elders in the greatest need. This aligns with the department's priority to create a streamlined, cost-effective, and consumer-friendly long-term care system. On this issue, the department is requesting approximately $1.4 million in general revenue budget authority to enhance the capacity for public guardianship services. Public guardianship is a crucial process designed to protect and exercise the legal rights of individuals with functional limitations who are unable to make their own decisions. Public guardians are appointed by the court to manage their affairs of such individuals, ensuring their well-being across various domains of life. The Office of Public and Professional Guardians contracts with 16 offices of public guardians to provide public guardian services to wards who have no family or friends available to serve as guardians and are determined incapacitated by a court. The need for public guardianship continues to grow, with an additional 272 wards on the pre-enrollment list, awaiting services due to the lack of capacity. This budget request aims to serve these wards by funding the Office of Public Guardians to provide services to those in need. Lastly is our federal budget authority, part of our legacy issues. First, the Emergency Home Energy Assistance Program is part of a federal program administered in conjunction with the Department of Commerce that provides assistance to low-income households that includes at least one person age 60 or older living in the home when the home experiences a home energy emergency. The department is requesting approximately $436,000 in recurring federal grants trust fund budget authority, which will bring the total, which will bring the department's total budget authority for this program to $6.4 million. Regarding the Older Americans Act, the department is the state unit on aging and works in concert with federal, state, local, and community-based public and private agencies and organizations. The department represents the interests of older Floridians, their caregivers, and elder advocates establishing an aging network. We are requesting approximately $52.8 million in federal grants trust fund budget authority, of which approximately $620,000 is recurring and $52.2 million is non-recurring to address carry-forward buildup and the historical gap between traditional authority and cash. The Adult Food Care Food Program is the USDA-funded program that provides meal reimbursements to adult daycare centers. The goals of this program is to support the provision of nutritious meals and or snacks served to community-based adults attending adult daycare centers. Nutritious meals will support and possibly improve their nutritional status, enabling them to prolong living in their own community. We are requesting approximately $2.6 million in recurring federal grants trust fund budget authority to allow the department to expend the USDA Adult Care Food Program grant award balances. On behalf of the department, I'd like to express our profound gratitude for your enduring partnership as we maintain Florida's status as a preeminent state and the nation for its senior population. With our legislative budget requests, we continue to build a fortified infrastructure that will benefit future generations to come. Whether it pertains to the expansion of home and community-based services or the implementation of additional support structures for those living with Alzheimer's, our commitment remains unwavering. The governor, the department, and our esteemed partners are collectively dedicated to ensuring that every Floridian can thrive and age well in our remarkable state. Again, thank you all for your time and attention today.
Thank you, Mr. Barker, and please extend our thanks to Secretary Branham and your whole team for what you do. Are there questions, members? We have, yes, Representative Bartleman.
Thank you, Chair. I have two questions, Chair.
Sure.
Okay, thank you. So I was looking at the federal budget authority requests, and I don't know if they would fall under any of this, but the biggest problem in my district is I have seniors who own their condos outright, retired, living on Social Security, and now because of insurance and assessments, they're being forced out of their homes because they have no income increase. These are like 80 and 90-year-old people who can live independently. Is there any, I see you have like for energy, but then you have the Older Americans Act. Can any of that money be used to help those seniors, because they're in a crisis right now?
You recognize.
Thank you, Chair. That's a great question. I'll get with our LAD to schedule some time to get with you on details. I don't have those particulars at my hand right now.
I appreciate it. And if you can share that with everyone, because I think all of us have those 55 and over communities that are going through there now. Thank you. And Chair, my second question?
Actually, we're going to go to Rep. Tribolsi first, and
no
then
worries.
We'll come back when everyone's had a chance.
Thank you, sir.
The apple. Representative Tribolsi, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for being here today. My question is around the senior housing and the $10 million request. Mm-hmm. How do you plan to let seniors know about this program, especially since that particular age group might not be as savvy on a computer or know where to find that program?
You recognize.
Thank you. The department will work with our aging network, municipalities, and other not-for-profits to execute this program. So we will provide services in a tiered approach. And I'm sorry. I want to make sure I'm answering your question. Can you repeat the last part of that, please?
I think you answered my question.
Okay. All right. Good.
You're good. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right, Rep. Woodson.
Thank you, Chair Garrison. Thank you, sir, for your presentation. And my question is around housing for senior as well. The process that is in place now in order for seniors to get housing is something that we need to talk about on the side, because what's in place right now is not really working, in the sense that whenever there's housing available for seniors, there's a line that is open for them to call. And I tested that myself, actually, because I was getting seniors calling my office and complaining the fact that they cannot get through. And I know you are trying your best, but I want to know, what are we going to do in order for those seniors not only to know about it, like Rep. Trabucci just mentioned, that the information is available to them, and what are we doing in order to ensure that they don't keep calling all day? First, they don't know when the program is open. And second, when they have that number, they keep calling all day and they don't have access. They can't get a spot. So what are we willing to do about that one?
Recognize.
Thank you. That's an excellent question. Just to reiterate, this is a new program that we're proposing. Housing, agreed, is one of the most pressing issues facing seniors today. But at the end of the day, no one should be prematurely put into an assisted living or nursing home facility over fixable housing issues like safety concerns and a bathroom or simple repairs to bring homes to code. So the purpose of the senior housing program is to address these types of issues.
Follow up. Yes, ma'am. Of course, Ranking Member.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The initial program that is in place, as my question was directed, is not working. So this is a new one. So we need to talk about that. I won't ask you more questions on that one, but I would like to have a conversation with you. My second question has to do with $10 million for 1,497 additional clients that you're trying to serve. How long is the wait list, actually? How many more do you have on the wait list, if you have that number? If you don't, then that's fine. You can always get it to me.
You recognize.
Chair, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
So in terms of wait list and the senior housing, this is a new program. We don't have anyone waiting for those types of services. So could you be a little bit more specific on your question?
Okay.
Ranking Member?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The existing list, that the existing program, actually, that you have, do you have a wait list for seniors, which I thought you did?
Yes.
You recognize me.
Thank you. So our pre-enrollment process focuses on seniors that have the highest level of need first. It's the list is fluid. People rotate on and off depending on their needs and their assessments.
You don't have that data.
So I can get details for you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Ranking Member. We're going to go to Rep. Mello, then Rep. Antone. Rep. Mello.
Thank you, Chair. And my question, thank you for your presentation. My question is very similar. I have a few questions to the ranking members. My family is personally impacted by this CCE program. So my curiosity is, do you have any idea of how many CCE clients that you actually have? And yes, I am curious as well about the waiting list.
Yes.
You recognize, before you answer, in speaking with our staff, the department provides our committee with a lot of information involving the wait list data. So members, I would just say this, if you have specific questions about when to get that information, the department does provide it to us. Just reach out to our staff director, Brian Clark, and he'll get you whatever you need in terms of that raw data. Just know we have it. They're providing it to us. We can get it to you. Just send them an email or stop by the office, and we'll get it to you. But with that, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Okay. To answer your question, for CCE services, to date, we've served 59,162 clients. And with the additional funding, we would serve a projected 1,497 additional.
Follow-up, Chair?
Yes, of course.
Thank you. My next is about the staffing issues that you have mentioned in your presentation, requiring or requesting additional FTEs. When I look at the FACE program and the Ombudsman program, do you have an idea of what kind of caseload you have for existing FTEs on average?
Chair,
you recognize.
Thank you. I don't have that exactly at my fingertips for CARES, but I can tell you that there are two significant classes that have very large vacancy rates. So in our CARES program, we have for CARES assessors, we have a vacancy rate of about 41%, which is 47 FTE. And these are the individuals going out into the community doing assessments. And then also the registered nurses, we have a 44% vacancy rate, which is about 19 nurses. And they approve those assessments. So any support we could get there would be helpful to kind of address that workload. From an LTCOP perspective, we're requesting an incremental change, and we believe that it'll go a long way in assisting the long-term care ombudsman program in meeting their visitation goals and supporting the needs of our senior population.
Thank you, Chair.
Rep. Anton. And Rep. Campbell, and if we have time, we'll get back to Rep. Bartleman, but I want to...
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We have about 5 minutes before we're going to move on, so just...
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your presentation. About 3 or 4 slides back, you mentioned a $5 million request for in-home care for individuals over the age of 60, and you talked about a subsidy and it being income-based. What's the income level and what's the subsidy?
You recognize.
Thank you, Chair. So for our HCE program, the subsidy is $160 per month is provided to all program participants. All clients will have a case manager who help arrange their services, and special subsidies are authorized for some consumers and can be used for incontinence supplies, medications, and medical supplies or wheelchairs.
And then the income level, is there a max income that those individuals can have, or?
You recognize?
I'm sorry, we'll get back with you on that.
All right, Rep. Campbell, and then we're going to move on to APD.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to go back to the $10 million. How will that $10 million be dispersed amongst the senior housing since it's a new program?
And you recognize?
Thank you, Chair. So we plan to execute this program statewide. We'll have municipalities, our aging network, and other private organizations apply. So our goal is to provide statewide services, but will be based on capacity of providers.
All right. Thank you, everyone. Mr. Barker, congratulations. You have survived your first time here at the Healthcare Appropriations Committee, and we really appreciate it. I would just say, members, as with all of these presentations, we do have a limited amount of time, so we're oftentimes not able to go as deep as we are. I really want to encourage each of you, as a member of this committee, to take your role as appropriator seriously. If you have questions, more in-depth questions about, where the money's going, how it's being spent, how it's being applied, I want your questions here. They're important. But sometimes we don't have the opportunity for follow-up like we'd like to. So I want to encourage you to reach out to the department. They will come to you, I assure you. They will come to your offices and work with you and get you whatever data you need. So please avail yourself of that and take advantage of that opportunity. And also, it's also our responsibility as legislators to make sure we're doing our homework. So please make sure we do that. Thank you very much, Mr. Barker. All right, next up is the Agency for Persons with Disabilities. And Ms. Salinas is here. I neglected to do this before Mr. Barker spoke. We have a rule here in the Healthcare Appropriations Subcommittee. This is an acronym free zone. So when you're responding to questions, don't assume we know what the acronyms mean, because oftentimes we don't. Just speaking for myself, as we learn healthcare. So take the time necessary to make sure we know what you're talking about when it comes to some of these things, the shorthand that we use to make it work. But it's helpful for us on this side to not do that. Having said that, I'm going to use an acronym and say APD, you're recognized. And Rose, good seeing you again. And you are recognized. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Garrison, Vice Chair Jacques, Ranking Member Woodson, and distinguished members of the committee. Thank you for inviting us here to speak before you today. My name is Rose Salinas. I'm the Deputy Director of Budget Planning and Administration for the Agency for Persons with Disabilities. I'm honored to be invited here today to present highlights of the fiscal year 2024-25 legislative budget request for APD. Before I begin, I'd like to thank Governor Ron DeSantis and the legislature for its continued support for our agency and for your commitment and leadership in supporting Floridians with unique abilities by providing the resources to best support this sacred population that we have been given the honor to serve. I would also like to thank our providers for their passion and dedication in serving our clients. Our mission at APD is to support individuals with unique abilities in their families in living, learning, and working in their communities by creating multiple pathways to possibilities. The focus of our agency is empowering individuals to thrive. We are working to move from a state of core service delivery historically based on crisis response to a state that will increase opportunities to serve individuals and their families at the earliest moment possible by providing seamless service delivery and increased opportunities for our clients. To fulfill this mission and focus, our proposed budget for fiscal year 2024-25 is $2.39 billion, which represents an overall increase from our current fiscal year of 3.6%. The home and community-based care waiver represents 85% of our total budget and 87% of our total general revenue funding. As part of the creation of these additional pathways to serve individuals, we are requesting the following issues. The agency is requesting $79.6 million to serve additional clients on the home and community-based services waiver by offering enrollment to individuals in pre-enrollment categories 1 through 3, which are crisis, children in the child welfare system, and individuals with intensive needs, to enable these individuals to continue living in a community setting. We're also requesting $2 million, $1 million in non-recurring general revenue, to conduct an actuarial analysis to provide necessary financial information for including in a federal application for an adult pathways waiver. This waiver aims to address intermediate levels of need as individuals transition to adulthood and achieve greater independence and empowerment by providing the necessary supports and services to meet varying levels of need at the earliest moment possible to influence outcomes relating to health, safety, and well-being. Feedback from families seeking services include the need for early intervention and continuous therapy services and supports to achieve advancement and resiliency for both the individuals and caregivers. The average age of individuals who enrolled on the waiver in the past two fiscal years through crisis designation is 26 years old. There's a demonstrated need to provide a capped amount of highly utilized services to improve outcomes and overall individual and family well-being for this population. This study will help determine these services and the suggested cap limits. The agency is also requesting $29.4 million, which is $12.4 million in recurring general revenue, to support the Developmental Disabilities Managed Care Pilot by providing funding for the voluntary enrollment of up to 600 individuals. The agency is requesting $709,000, which is $355,000 non-recurring general revenue, to implement a workforce development apprenticeship pilot program for frontline team members employed by Medicaid providers who directly serve our individuals with unique abilities. This apprentice program works to further professionalize the critical role of direct service professionals and support a lasting career path within the system of care. To support individuals, families, and provider development in rural areas of opportunity, the agency is also requesting $350,000, which is $175,000 of non-recurring general revenue, to conduct a fiscal analysis to determine funding needing to support a rate differential for these rural areas. The agency is requesting $2 million, $861,000 in recurring general revenue to adjust funding rates for nursing services on the home and community-based care waiver to match those current Medicaid rates. We are also requesting $6.5 million, which is $3.3 million of non-recurring general revenue, to continue the investment in learning models to serve individuals with developmental disabilities and co-occurring mental health diagnoses. The pilot includes a co-response from subject matter experts in both behavioral health and developmental disabilities as part of the existing mobile response team framework. The pilot also includes education and training for positions to effectively support individuals with dual diagnoses. Funding allows for the continuance of this pilot program in Orange and Broward counties and expansion of the program to Leon and Hillsborough counties. This completes my presentation. Thank you again for inviting us to present highlights from our LBR request to the committee. I will be happy to answer any questions you may have at this time.
Thank you, Ms. Salinas. And before we take questions, I think Representative Steele is going to be first up. I want to thank Secretary Hatch personally. She's not here, so she's watching, for coming to my office yesterday and meeting with myself and Representative Busada about some funding issues, the questions we had to clarify some things. It was very helpful, and I just want to publicly thank her for taking the time to do that. Now we're going to start with Rep. Steele, and then we'll go to Rep. Bartleman. Rep. Steele, you are recognized for question and follow-up if you need it.
Just one question. Yes, and thank you, Chair. Thank you for what you do. I mean, obviously, these are individuals in our communities that need the most help. I just want to know on the total budget line, how many actual individuals in the state that we actually help for the $2.4 billion?
And you're recognized.
Thank you. On our waiver, we currently have approximately 35,600 that are currently on our home and community-based services waiver. We also have approximately 21,000 on our waiting list. Some of those individuals receive services through our individual and family supports category, and we also have room and board services that are provided on a limited basis. And we also support three developmental disabilities 24/7 centers. So in total, we approximately 61,000 individuals that we are providing services for on some level.
Good. So, but the 61,000 excludes the 21 that are on the waiting list, though, right? Of aid.
You recognize?
And
40,000, roughly.
Roughly.
All right, thank you. Rep. Bartleman, you're recognized.
Yes, thank you, Chair. And it's interesting because I've had a ton of meetings and they all talk about issues finding service providers because of rates. And then literally right before this meeting, I was speaking to the Association of Rehabilitative Facilities. And so what I am hearing that even if we gave you all the money to come off the wait list and only that they have a survey actually, which is like shows 34% have responded. And just from the last presentation with a staffing shortage, what I am hearing is that the provider rate is reimbursement rate, the service provider rate is a problem because they are unable to hire staff. So even if we took all the money for the wait list, they're unable to find the workforce, which is not unique to this area because in every other area of healthcare we're hearing this. And then I saw in your presentation that you were going to look at the rural areas, and I want to challenge you a little bit further because if you live in one of the populated counties, they can't afford housing, so they can't afford to take the job. So they're having now the issues that were mainly rural issues are now because of housing and insurance happening in the large counties as well. So my question is, knowing that we return return funds back to the general reserve every year that are unspent, knowing that services have decreased by 38% overall for your service providers, it's a big question, and I'm sorry, I just got this information, but it makes perfect sense. I want to dig deep with you and my chair because he's on top of all of this as well. How can we help you with the service providers? Because if we don't have the workforce, the services aren't being provided. So what do you see as a solution beyond the rural, beyond the study and the budget request? What else can we do?
You're recognized to answer that very concise question.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Bartleman. That's a great question. And there are, you know, we are working to look at things in a new and different way, and we're willing to work with our partners in the legislature and governor's office to address these issues. There are, you know, as you see in the presentation, we are trying to do some things. The rural areas opportunity, of course, is to help address some of those rates within rural areas and less populated zones. We also, the pilot, the apprenticeship pilot program that I mentioned, that is designed to help sort of elevate the role of the direct service professional and help them receive more training and recognition for the important work they do and encourage that as a profession, a long-term profession, like many of those people have done, which will hopefully help increase the ability for them to be able to, you know, receive more pay for those services. And there are lots of other areas we'd love to talk to you about.
I'm sorry, I'm a little taken aback here. I saw Rep. Amnesty has a question. Representative, you are recognized.
Thank you very much, Chair. I want to thank you for everything you do for persons with disability in the state of Florida. And one of the questions that I have is looking at the presentation, one of the charts provides information on faith-based institutions. How many faith-based institutions partner with the agency to provide these services?
And you're recognized.
We have been working, going around the state. They have done a lot of visiting and working with different partners. I don't have a specific number for you, but I'd be glad to get that information. We do have a lot of interest from all of our partners that we're trying to look at, again, multiple pathways to serve our individuals, because we realize no matter how much money you give us, there's, you know, that we'll always need more. So we're looking at how we can incorporate resources from every angle.
If you wouldn't mind distributing that to the rest of the committee, I know I'd be interested in that as well. Thank you, Representative. I think Representative Steele had a follow-up, and then we're good. Sure, you good? No, go out for you. Okay, perfect. If you would just follow up with Representative Steele after committee, that'd be great. Any other questions, members? Any other questions? All right, thank you very much. And I know we say this every time y'all come here, but I want to reiterate, you really are doing the Lord's work, and we appreciate what you do. It's very difficult and demanding, and just know that you have our full support as you do your important work. So
thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Thank you. All right, last up, I think. Here we go. Saving the best for last. We have the Department of Veterans Affairs. Hey. See, Bob, you're recognized. Good seeing you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And good morning, Chair Garrison, Vice Chair Jock, and members of the committee. First, happy Veterans Week, and especially Rep. Black, Rep. Salzman, Army Air Force Strong, and Rep. Salzman, she was really the driving force.
It's going to kill her that she's not here to hear you.
I know.
I just want you to know.
Somewhere out there, I hope she's watching.
I promise you she is.
So thank you. Thank you for that. Today, I present FDVA's budget priorities that allow us to continue our mission for caring for our most frail veterans, being there for veterans in crisis, and for supporting the governor's, the legislature's, and General Hartzell's goal of ensuring that Florida is the most sought-after state by veterans. For our core mission of caring for Florida's frail veterans, FDVA has 1,102 skilled nursing and assisted living beds in 9 state veteran homes. COVID and the workforce shortage took a toll on these homes. 2 years ago, we stood in front of this committee. Our occupancy rate was just above 60%. We were hemorrhaging staff, and we had to ask for $42 million in general revenue just to sustain our operations. That is to keep the lights on and pay the bills. Today, I'm happy to report that because of your actions, your incentive plan that you passed, the pay raises that you gave us, the flexibility that you gave us in our operations, our homes are almost back to pre-COVID operations. Our occupancy rate for our legacy homes is now at 95%. In fact, today, we are at 95% of our beds are filled in our legacy homes. Our staffing is stabilized. We are not hemorrhaging staff like we did, and we are slowly hiring our staff again. And our operations have moved from the red and into the black, which is negating our need to ask you for operational funding. And I see Brian writing that down. Our ask today is not for operational money, but for additional funding for projects to improve the experience that our veteran residents receive in our homes. Over my 30 years of experience in the nursing home profession, I personally visited just about every one of the 700 nursing homes in the state of Florida. And I could tell you that our veteran nursing homes are at the top of the list. And our budget today is so that we can continue to have our veteran nursing homes the top homes in the state of Florida, as well as the country. So with that, I'm now going to hit the highlights of our budget, focusing on the key requests in our budget proposal. The first proposal that we have is $10.7 million in non-recurring general revenue, and this is for repair and replacement of capital equipment. Our legacy nursing homes, we have 9 nursing homes in the state of Florida. 7 of them are between 20 and 34 years old. So with that, we are seeing the operational life of some of our capacity being hit. Chillers, HVACs, our lift systems in the ceilings, call bell systems, things like that. They're coming to the end of their life, and for us to keep our homes up to date, we need to replace those systems. One of the other major things that we are asking as part of this $10 million is in Orlando Lake State Veteran Nursing Home, we have a 60-bed Alzheimer unit, and the common space for those residents really is inadequate for that home. So what we'd like to do is add 3 day rooms to that to give our Alzheimer and dementia residents more space for them to socialize and for them to do their activities. So with that, we are requesting an expansion of our fixed capital that really will expand the lifespan and the utility of our homes. Next slide. Our second major request that we're asking for is $549,000 for 6 veteran claim examiners. Our veteran claim examiners, they are our frontline troops. They are the ones who meet with our veterans every day, and their job is to advocate that they get the benefits and services that these veterans deserve. They bring millions of dollars into the state through federal funding of services for veterans. We currently have 54 veterans in 36 VA facilities, and in addition, they staff our VA nursing homes, our domiciliary, the Hillsborough County Resource Center, Santa Fe College. The problem we have is that there are 11 VA facilities in the state that we don't have a full-time veteran claim examiner in them. What we have to do is take a veteran claim examiner and bring them in part-time and then put them back. What it does is that's shortchanging the veterans in those 2 facilities. So we are asking for 6 veteran claim examiners be added to our arsenal. Next slide. Replacement of durable medical equipment and non-medical equipment. This right here is $954,000, and this is really our routine maintenance. Things like beds wear out, IV systems, nurse carts, kitchen equipment. And here's what's the good news about this right here is every year we come up to you and we ask for $1 million roughly in GR, and roughly you give us $1 million in GR. As I talked about it, our trust fund is getting healthy again, and we believe that we can absorb this cost from our trust fund. So we are not asking for $1 million in GR. What we're asking for is give us legislative authority on a recurring basis for us to use $954,000 each year from our trust fund for us to do our routine maintenance. Next slide, please. Next is our information technology. FDVA, like some of the other agencies, we've been subject to hacking threats, and our IT has been having to increase our firewalls and increase our protection. We would like to add in an additional $187,000 of protection. And really what this is a proactive system that actually stays on top of all the threats that are out there, and it proactively tests our system with those threats to make sure that our firewalls and our IT are maintain the highest level of protection. The other thing that we're asking for is $492,000 to improve the internet in our homes. As I stated early on, our homes, 7 of 9, are between 20 and 34 years old. Well, our internet is old too. And as you can just imagine with your own internet in your house, 20 and 30 year old internet just doesn't work. So we need to improve the internet in our homes. And that's what that request is for. Next slide is our nurse staffing increases. So the first is for about $900,000 for us to add 6 registered nurses to FDVA. And really what this is coming to is we are looking at ways to improve our operations. Right now, the way our homes are set up is we billet our homes under the assumption that every nurse is available every day. Well, we have nurses who take vacation, who take sick leave, or on FMLA. And so when that happens and we don't have a nurse, we have to rely on agency or overtime. We want to push agency out. We want to lower our overtime. By us putting in an additional nurse position, that will allow us to use regular nurse hours to fill those positions. Again, that'll help us reduce overtime and reduce our agency use. The other is for $773,000 for 10 positions for our Allen Cash nursing home. Allen Cash is one of our 2 new nursing homes. We just heard today that we've got our Medicare number. We have our Medicaid approval. So we approved for Medicare and Medicaid. We are waiting for our VA approval for us to be reimbursed by the VA. We have 25 residents in that building, and we are looking to fill that building. And to do that, we need to hire out our nurse positions. So we're asking for 10 positions for that new building. Next slide. Our next slide is a Collier County State Veterans Nursing Home. This will be our 10th nursing home, and we are asking for budget authority to move ahead on that. We have an extremely exciting partnership with Collier County. They have been a great partner. They did a penny sales tax to help fund the state portion of that nursing home. And we are also working with Collier County. I don't even want to call it a nursing home. What it is it's going to be a veterans long-term care community. Because we're working with Collier County, we're going to not only have long-term care beds, but we're going to put adult daycare into this community. We're going to do outpatient therapy for the veterans out in the community, and we're going to have other services there so that it is more than just one part of the long-term care continuum. Collier County has, as I said, they did a penny sales tax. They are going to pay the 35% state portion, and the federal government will pay the 65% state portion. What we need is budget authority to spend $102 million. Again, there's no state money, but for us to put the grant in, we have to demonstrate to the federal government that the legislature in an affirmative vote gave us, FDVA, the budget authority to move ahead on that. And that's what this is about. And we are so excited to do this.
I'm going to interrupt you real quick on the Collier Initiative. I know Representative Mello is on this committee, and obviously she's been very involved in that initiative back home, and I would be remiss if I didn't publicly thank her for her efforts in that respect. She's been a warrior on this issue, so I know you're excited about that partnership, and we are as well. So.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Garrison, for that. Representative Mello has been absolutely instrumental in this, instrumental in us working with the County Commission on it, helping raise the money, and this is We are going to set the example for the country of where veterans' long-term care goes with this nursing home. And we're so excited about it, and we're so excited to work with you on it. Thank you. Our next is Veterans is for Florida. And we all know this is Veterans Florida. You all, the legislature, created Veterans Florida 10 years ago to assist veterans who want to move to the state of Florida and get a job or active duty coming off transitioning into jobs. Veterans Florida last year, they assisted 4,000 veterans with that mission, and they managed the SkillBridge program. SkillBridge is an incredible program which DOD created. DOD, I used an acronym there, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, it's a military guy. You can't help it. I understand.
I owe a dollar and a coffee mess for that one. The Department of Defense has created the SkillBridge program where active duty troops can spend their last 6 months working in the civilian sector that they want to transition to, kind of like an internship or a fellowship. Veterans Florida is our key organization that works with the Department of Defense on that program. What we are asking for differently from previous years, we've been up here 10 years. Every year we've asked for $2 million in services. You all have granted it to us in non-recurring funding. We're asking that it be made recurring funding. It's been 10 years, and we're asking that that be recurring. And then another $500,000, which would be new money for services, that we're asking for it to be non-recurring to really promote that SkillBridge program. Next slide. It's very unfortunate, but the VA, except unless you're a 100% disabled veteran or in limited circumstances, does not provide dental care. And so we see many low-income veterans not getting the dental care that they need. In fact, even in our state veteran nursing homes, many of our residents are not covered by dental care, and we rely on our Florida Veterans Foundation to raise money for dental care for our veterans. You all saw that, and last year you passed House Bill 635, which creates a grant program for dentists to provide dental care to low-income veterans. This year, we're asking that the legislature fund that with $3 million in non-recurring funds. And this will be an incredible program to help veterans across the state. And with that, that is my presentation, and I am happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Deputy Director Estalls. Any, what was that question? And then we'll follow by Representative Steele. Ranking Member, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Mr. Avalos, for your presentation as well. Happy Veterans Week to you and to all the veterans here. We really appreciate your service, and thank you so much. You mentioned the $102 million that part of it is local, part of it is federal. So what is that $102 million would be doing? What would the money be allocated for, the $102 million that you mentioned?
You recognize, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative, for that question. So what we are looking to do is Collier County has donated a 20-acre site, which is on a former golf course right off of I-95, and it is in a neighborhood that has, it's a working-class neighborhood. So really, the people who are going to work in our nursing homes are going to be around us, which is a great way for us to look at the workforce issue down there. What we intend to do is we intend to build a nursing home, and we're doing the architectural design. It could be 112, could be 120 beds, depending on how the designs come out. We're going to put in an adult daycare to take care of about 35 to 40 residents or 40 clients. And then also we're going to split our outpatient department so that we're going to have inpatient and outpatient department. We also want to put in areas for veteran service officers and other services for the community. So it's going to be an exciting project. And like you said, Representative, the federal government, if all works out and we go through the application process and they all approve it all, they will pay 65% of it. Collier County, through their penny sales tax, will pay 35% of it.
No money from the state. Thank you. Second question.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair. I appreciate your comment. You also mentioned that 7 out of the 9 facilities are old. And I want you to know my questions. There's no money that is too much for us to allocate for our veterans for the service that you have provided to our country. And we owe you a debt of gratitude to do what we need to do by our veterans. You mentioned 7 of them are old. Is there any of those in Broward County? I know about the manager, and how old is this facility? And the one that I know in Broward County, I don't know how many that you have.
You're recognized, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative, for that. Yes, ma'am. Sandy Nininger State Veteran Nursing Home is in Pembroke Pines in Broward County. Sandy Nininger is 23 years old. And so, for instance, for projects for Sandy Nininger, we just hardened her. We put new roof on and we put new windows in so she can sustain a Cat 5 hurricane. But specifically on our list, our kitchen's old. We need a replacement in our kitchen, and we need to replace the lifts in that building. Again, she's a beautiful building. She looks nice even though she's 23 years old, but we have some capital infrastructure in there, such as lifts in our kitchens, that need replacing.
Just quick. One more? Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, sir. So you're looking for to renovate those facilities, and also 11 VA clinics that are not staffed. They are staffed part-time now, so you're looking to get full-time staff on board. You're also the dental clinic that you mentioned, the dental care, as a result of the bill that we passed, you want to make sure that the money is allocated to get the dental care services to the veterans. Am I correct?
You recognize.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. So for the first part of the question, yes, our goal as an agency is to be in every VA facility within the state, every VA healthcare facility in the state, because that's where veterans are at, right? And that's where veterans who need services are at. I travel around the state and I visit our veteran claim examiners. I have never, and sometimes I just stop there. I don't tell them I'm coming because I'm driving along and I just stop. I've never been there when they haven't had a line outside their offices. Mm-hmm. So what we have to do is we have to take them part-time, move them out of their office that day and from one clinic to the other so we could staff the other building. And so the lines back up in the old clinic and so on. So our goal, again, is we want to be in every VA clinic out there in the state, and this will do it. Yeah. And then, the dental. We fortunately have worked with the Florida Veterans Foundation, who have been a great partner on the dental, and they would manage this program. Right now, I mentioned that our veterans in our state veteran nursing homes, many of them don't have dental services. And the thing about it is when they lose their dentures or they have tooth problems, it leads to other problems. They break their dentures, they can't eat, and then they have health issues. The Florida Veterans Foundation actually has a grant program. They raise money on their own, and they provide the dental care for our residents in the building. This would take it out to the general community, because there are a lot of aging veterans in their homes who need dental care.
All right. Thank you.
I'm going to go to Rep. Steele on this. If we have follow-up, we can come back. Rep. Steele, you had a question?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for what you do. And by the way, thank you for coming by in my office and talking about this. I just have a couple of follow-up questions because after you and I talked, I called my buddy. But how many square feet is that $102 million?
Good question. I have to get back to you
okay.
on that one, Representative.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Rep. Bartleman.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to say that I definitely concur with the need for the claim agents because there is such a great need. And I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank your office and Roy and everyone. There's nothing more painful than to receive a call from a veteran or their family who's in crisis. And you guys always step up and help the family. So thank you very much. And then on a positive note, last year when you did this presentation, I was like the weight of the world. You hear all the issues and all the needs. And I want to just thank the chair and the speaker and the legislature because when he started his presentation, he said, we fixed the nursing home crisis. And it feels good to know for the vets that what we're doing is really making a difference. So to the chair and leadership, thank you all so much.
These guys get all the credit. Any other questions? One more. Yes, please. Of course, your ranking member is always recognized for a comment.
I appreciate your indulgence, Mr. Chair. No, I just want to say thank you so much, Bob, for the work that you do as well. And also, Chair Garrison, who always work with us in order for you to get what you need and the leadership. But most of all, I know the work that I have done with you and also, with your team, actually, the work that you do in order to make life better for our veterans. I appreciate all this, and I hope all of us can stand behind it because we owe it to our veterans. We owe you a debt of gratitude. For someone like me who comes from a country like Haiti who the veterans took an oath and they don't do exactly what they're supposed to do, to stand by the country and do what's right by the people. I appreciate living in the United States of America where the veterans put their life on the line for us. So I appreciate what you all do, and we need to do right by our veterans. And I also want to make sure that the spouses are covered in all this work that we're doing, the spouses of the veterans, because they put a lot as well on the line in order for us to enjoy the freedom that we enjoy in these United States of America. So thank you.
You're here. Thank you, Deputy Director. I don't think we have any more questions, so you are relieved.
Relieved to duty. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. I will just say thank you all for your engagement today on these LBRs the last 2 weeks. Before we adjourn, I'm going to give the members of this committee some homework before our next meeting. What's that? Did I forget somebody? You're writing down. Oh, great. Oof, I was worried I forgot something. Next week, we are going to have some presentations related to follow-up on the February 22nd meeting that we had last year regarding some transparency initiatives. If you remember, those of you who were on the committee last year, we had a discussion with the Agency for Healthcare Administration on the Florida Price Finder website. We asked them to do some homework and do some research, come back to us on some issues. We're going to have that presentation next week. So I'm requesting that the members of this committee, between now and then, go on to the Florida Channel and type in the February 22nd meeting and watch it. Vice Chair Jacques and I met with senior staff from the department today, and they were great. Couldn't have been more cooperative and collaborative. I really would like for this committee meeting coming forward not to be a rehashing of things that we worked at the last meeting, but to kind of build and move forward. We're going to focus a lot on the future of the Florida Price Finder Transparency website, how it can be best utilized and make sure that the money we're spending on that project is accomplishing its desired goal. So my request is for each of you to refresh before you come to our next committee meeting, and it's February 22nd. I'm going to have my assistant, my legislative aide, Ryan Kelly, Ryan Kimmy, send out a link so every member of the committee has that information before we get started. So do that for me, and it'd be greatly appreciated. And I will just say one last thing in honor of Veterans Week. We all have veterans that are important to us in our life. I know lots of sons and spouses and parents and loved ones who served. I'd be remiss if I did not honor my personal hero, Captain Bob Simpson, my father-in-law, this Veterans Week. So with that, in honor of that, and on behalf of all those who have served, Representative Black moves that we rise. This meeting is adjourned.